You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 12th of May 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, today we're going to continue with our series here on Dr. Bernard Randall's sermon. A sermon which he was reported to the anti-terrorism services prevent for actually giving at the school which he was employed at. And it was a Christian school that he was employed at, and he was employed to give the pupils Christian instruction, which is all that he was doing. And I'm concentrating on this because I do like to highlight the fact that we do still have some good people around that are speaking up for what is right and that are concerned about the way that the country is going. We don't often hear about them. Normally we hear about teachers that are pushing for homosexual acts to be taught to children or transsexualism to be taught to children. Or we're hearing about police officers claiming that white nationalism is the greatest threat the country has ever faced. So it's good to come across people that are a part of the establishment like this priest that is speaking up for a plurality of views and speaking up for traditional morality and traditional Christianity. And basically what he was doing was saying that we have room for disagreement. We don't all have to think in the same way, and you should not accept that you have to think in a certain way. You should be able to think for yourself. And the whole point of schooling really is to teach young people how to think for themselves, how to weigh things up in their mind and come to the correct decision about something. And that was really all that he was saying in this sermon. And we're going to look at the sermon today because it really is very inoffensive. It's just common sense. Around June 2019, Dr. Randall says he was approached by a pupil who asked him, "How come we are told we have to accept all of this LGBT stuff in a Christian school?" Others that he talked to were similarly upset, concerned, or confused by the issues. And I can imagine that very, very young children must be absolutely horrified when they're taught about the mechanics of homosexual sexual activity. I mean, that must absolutely terrify them if it's not scary enough hearing about heterosexual activity. And don't be misled, they are trying to teach this to nursery school age children. The woman that we were talking about yesterday that gave this talk at the teacher training day, on the book which she is holding up in the image that accompanies the podcast, it talks about embedding LGBT issues in nursery school. That means children that are under the age of 5 that are being taught this stuff. So, of course, it's going to upset them. They're going to be confused about it. And on top of that, we also have the issue that it is explicitly prohibited in the Bible and has been explicitly prohibited by the church for 2,000 years. Now, if the state changes the law, so long as you are not expected to break the law, and Christians aren't expected to break the law, they're not forced to be homosexual or forced to engage in homosexual acts, then we have to obey the law and don't discriminate against these people, don't incite hate against these people. But you don't have to agree with what they're saying, and you can say, well, the Bible tells me that I don't think that that is the right thing to do, and I think you would be happier if you weren't doing that. And that's not coming from a position of hate, that's coming from a position of concern for the people involved. And that's what Dr. Bernard Randall is talking about here, and that's what he's trying to explain to his pupils. He says, the question was put to me in a very particular way. How come we are told we have to accept all this LGBT stuff in a Christian school? I thought that was a very intelligent and thoughtful way of asking about the conflict of values, rather than asking which is right and which is wrong. Again, that is a good point there, because he's not actually condemning this behaviour. It's the Bible that condemns that behaviour. And the pupil isn't asking whether this is condemned behaviour or not, but they're just asking, why are we being told this conflicting teaching? Why are we being taught to be Christians, and yet at the same time we are being taught teachings that go against the Christian ones? So Dr. Randall says, my answer is this. There are some aspects of the Educate and Celebrate program which are simply factual. There are same-sex attracted people in our society. There are people who experience gender dysphoria, and so on. There are some areas where the two sets of values overlap. No one should be discriminated against simply for who he or she is. That is a Christian value, based in loving our neighbours as ourselves. All these things should be accepted straightforwardly by all of us, and it is right that equality's law reflects that. And again, we always say here at Radio Albion, you should always be courteous to people, you should always be polite to people, you shouldn't discriminate against people. And the sort of subjects that we talk about here at Radio Albion, it's not because we're trying to discriminate against people, it's because we want our own people, our own extended kinship group, to realise that a lot of these things weaken our extended kinship group. And the nature of the world is that these kinship groups are competing against one another, and it is a competition, and you want to win that competition. That's why we point these things out, not to try and discriminate against people, but to get our own people thinking about what is best for us, instead of thinking about what is best for these other groups all the time, because what may be best for these other groups may not be what is best for our group. He continues, but there are areas where the two sets of ideas are in conflict, and in these areas you do not have to accept the ideas and ideologies of LGBT activists. Indeed, since the school exists to educate boys and girls according to the Protestant and evangelical principles of the Church of England, anyone who tells you that you must accept contrary principles is jeopardising the school's charitable status, and therefore its very existence. So we have a contradiction there, quite a serious contradiction, that he is supposed to be teaching Christian principles, and yet the school is teaching non-Christian principles. So he continues, you should no more be told you have to accept LGBT ideology than you should be told you must be in favour of Brexit, or must be Muslim, to both of which I am sure most of you would quite rightly object. I am aware that there will be a good few in our community who will have been struggling. If they feel they are being told that they must accept ideas which run counter to their faith, or indeed non-faith-based reasoning about the world. So I want to say to everyone, but especially to those who have been troubled, that you are not obliged to accept someone else's ideology. You are perfectly at liberty to hear ideas out and then think, no, that's not for me. And as I say, the whole point of schooling is to teach people how to hear ideas out and work out the ones that are sound and the ones that are unsound, so that they can make decisions based upon that. So they can make decisions based upon things like pattern recognition. And a lot of this that they're being taught at schools now is to think that pattern recognition is somehow wrong and it's not a good thing. But we developed the ability to recognise patterns to protect us. It's an instinctive thing about protecting your own life and protecting your own safety, really. He continues, there are several areas where many or most Christians, and for that matter people of other faiths too, will be in disagreement with LGBT activists, and where you must make up your own mind. So, it is perfectly legitimate to think that marriage should only properly be understood as being a lifelong exclusive union of a man and a woman. Indeed, that definition is written into English law. And as we talked about on the Monday, it's actually written into Church of England canon law, which has the weight of statute law in English law. So even though the law has now changed, that the statutes have now changed, and a man can get married in the eyes of the state, it is also written into law that marriage can only properly be understood as a lifelong exclusive union of a man and a woman. And this is the sort of problems that we are having today. They are making laws that contradict previous laws. And you can't do that. You're supposed to continually build upon what has gone before, not just do the opposite of what has gone before. He continues, you may perfectly properly believe that as an ideal, sexual activity belongs only within such marriage, and that therefore any other kind is morally problematic. That is the position of all the major faith groups, although note that it doesn't apply only to same-sex couples. And I'll interject there and say, well, this is the issue, isn't it? Heterosexuals are expected to abstain from sex before they get married, and people are applauded for remaining celibate. And yet, when homosexuals are concerned, we're taught to think that it's impossible for them to abstain from homosexual sex, and that they should just be able to engage in it. And yet, when we have heterosexuals, we understand that you don't have to go out and have sex all the time. It's perfectly possible to save yourself until you get married. And it's looked up to as being a good thing to do that. Nobody would say, well, I'm a heterosexual, therefore I just have to go out and have sex. I can't help myself, and my whole life has to revolve around it, and my identity has to be based around it. And yet with homosexuals, that's what we're told. We're told that they cannot possibly not have homosexual sex, and their life, their whole identity has to be based around it. So even when you look at it like that, there is no equality between the two. They are not equal. It's two different ways of living your life, two different ways of thinking. He continues, it is a belief based not only on scripture, but on a highly positive view of marriage as the building block of a society where people of all kinds flourish, and on recognizing that there are many positive things in life more important than sex, if only we would let them be. This viewpoint is recognized by many people as being extremely liberating, and it is an ethical position which could also be arrived at independently of any religious text, I think. And this bit about it being liberating there, that is because we become a slave to our passions. You don't put a fire out by pouring more oil upon it. True freedom is the freedom from temptation and the freedom to resist temptation. We're told today that freedom means that you can indulge in temptation as much as you like. But that doesn't help. That just means you become a slave to your own lust. You become a slave to your own passions. Dr. E. Michael Jones talks about this a lot in his book, Libido Dominandi, being dominated by your libido. In other areas, you are entitled to think, if it makes more sense to you that human beings are indeed male and female, that your sex can't be changed. That although the two sexes have most things in common, there are some real, biologically based differences between them overall. And if you think that, you would be in accord not only with the tradition of most Christians and other faiths, but much of the biological and psychological sciences too. And we have gone into a lot of these biological and psychological differences here at Radio Albion. I think we may still have that series linked to in the sidebar at Radio Albion. I did a three-part series on transsexuals, which goes into these biological differences that can't be changed, things like hand size, feet size, the bone structure of the hips, or all sorts of things like that. Continuing, you are entitled, if you wish, to look at some of the claims made about gender identity and think that it is incoherent to say that. For example, gender is quite independent of any biological factor, but that a person's physiology should be changed to match his or her claimed gender. Or incoherent to say that gender identity is both a matter of individual determination and social conditioning at the same time. Or incoherent to make claims about being non-binary or gender fluid by both affirming and denying the gender stereotypes which exist in wider society. And again, what he's pointing out there is the cognitive dissonance that we have, the contradictory ideas that we're constantly being taught, which leave us in a neurotic state. He says, if these claims, which do seem to be made, are incoherent, then they cannot be more than partially true. Yet truth is important as we try to make decisions about the consequences of these ideas. And you might reasonably notice that some LGBT activists will happily lie about gender identity being a legally protected characteristic, which it is not, and from that observation, wonder whether there are other areas where their relationship to truth is looser than might be the ideal. But by way of contrast, no one has the right to tell you that you must lie about these matters to say things you sincerely believe to be false. That is the tactic of totalitarianism and dictatorship. And that's a very important sentence that he is pointing out there. It's the way that we say things that matters. The laws that we have about not inciting hatred, it doesn't mean that we can't talk about these subjects. It just means that when we talk about these subjects, we have to be careful about the language that we use. And I might be talking about that later this week with Mark Collette in one of these podcasts. But I've spoken about this so many times before, how when we talk about these subjects, we have to be careful that we don't appear to be hostile to these minorities. And to determine whether you're hostile to the minorities or not, it could be because you're using racial slurs. It could be because you're using negative language. So we have to think about the language that we're using, but we should still be able to talk about these matters. As he says here, nobody has the right to tell you that you must lie about things. And I firmly believe that so long as we are based in a foundation of truth, we will be okay. And if we're based on a foundation of truth and we're being honest, we're not going to want to be hostile to other peoples or upset them in any way. Anyway, so we just need to be careful about the language that we use. He continues, on a more positive note, Christians will want to have a discussion about human identity, which focuses on the things we all have in common, rather than increasingly long lists of things which might divide. And again, that's what we're doing as nationalists. As nationalists, we are talking about an identity that we have, an ethnic identity that we all have in common together, that joins us all together as an extended kinship group, which is a great basis for forming social bonds and a great basis for working together to achieve things. We only have to look at all the successes that the Jews have had with their strong ethnic bonds and their strong working together as a group. We only have to look at them as an example to see that it is a positive thing. And Christianity does not exclude it. And that's what he's saying here. As Christians, we should be having discussions about identity which focus on the things we all have in common. And obviously he is talking about things that the whole of humanity has in common, but you can extend that to things that you have in common with your extended kinship group as well. And don't forget, this is the Church of England. It is a national church that is based on nationality, and the link that everybody of that nationality has between one another, particularly the language that we all use. He continues, "You might be concerned that if you take the religious view on these matters, you will be attacked and accused of homophobia and the like. But remember that religious belief is just as protected in law as sexual orientation, and no one has the right to discriminate against you or be abusive towards you." And that is very important, and that needs to be tested out in the courts, because what we have here is two minority groups and the rights of two minority groups. And Christians wish to be able to discuss their religion, and their religion is protected in law. And homosexuals see Christians discussing their religion as being discriminatory against them because it doesn't condone their behavior, basically. But we don't have to condone one another's behavior in order to tolerate one another. The Christians are being very, very tolerant here. It's the minority groups that are being intolerant towards the in-group, basically. He says, "Remember too that phobia words have a strict sense of extreme or irrational fear or dislike, like arachnophobia, fear of spiders, or triskaidekaphobia, fear of the number 13. Well, there's nothing extreme about sharing your view with the Church of England, established by law, and of the majority of the world's population who belong to these faiths. Nor is it irrational to hold these views, since they can be based both on secular reasoning and on scriptures." And I'll just stop there as well. We talk a lot here at Radio Albion about the secular reasoning for what we do, but we also talk about the scriptural basis for what we do, because we also like to talk about Christian things, because we are a pro-Christian radio station. We're not a Christian radio station, but we are certainly not anti-Christian anyway. He continues, "If on other grounds you are sure that the scriptures reflect the mind of God, then they provide the very best reasons possible for anything. And," I will just interject there, "and it also provides protection under the law, because Christianity is a religion and religious belief is protected by law." He continues, "But homophobia and transphobia have come to be used in a looser sense, to mean often simply, you disagree with me and I'm going to refuse to listen to you and shame you to shut you down. In other words, they have sometimes come to be terms of abuse, used in a dictionary definition, bigoted and bullying way. You can safely ignore these uses, although that takes moral courage." I know. And this is the amazing thing. We get accused of being the bigots, but in actual fact, it's those that accuse others of transphobia and Islamophobia that are actually being the bigots. They are the ones that are refusing to hear the other person's point of view. He continues, "And you may think that LGBT rights are different somehow, because no one chooses to belong to the varied groups represented by these ideas. To which I would remind you that equality's law does not recognise that distinction. All equalities are, in fact, equal. So all in all, if you are at ease with, quote, all this LGBT stuff, close quote, you are entitled to keep those ideas. If you are not comfortable with it for the various, especially religious reasons, you should not feel required to change. Whichever side of this conflict of ideas you come down on, or even if you are unsure of some of it, the most important thing is to remember that loving your neighbour as yourself does not mean agreeing with everything he or she says. It means that when we have these discussions, there is no excuse for personal attacks or abusive language." And again, this is personal attacks and abusive language. What about words like racist? What about words like Nazi? What about words like homophobe or Islamophobe? They're all personal attacks to shut down a discussion. And all we want is to be able to discuss these ideas. But we get censored. And it's these attacks against us that are used to censor us. That is what gets used as the evidence for somebody to be removed from Twitter or Facebook or whatever. It's just simply because they've been called one of these nasty names. He continues, "We should all respect that people on each side of the debate have deep and strongly held convictions. And because, unlike Brexit, this is not a debate which is subject to a vote, it is an ongoing process. So there should be a shared effort to find out what real truth looks like, and to respect that that effort is made honestly and sincerely by all people, even if not everybody comes up with the same answers. For now, And again, this is a really shameful thing that people just think that nationalists are all about hate. We are searching for the truth. And people should respect that and respect that we're no different to anybody else. We have the same desire to get to the truth. It's just that we have discovered that there are more truths out there than we are told about by the establishment. And we should be able to discuss these things. We should be able to debate these things without being silenced, without being censored. And it's a great shame that this preacher lost his job at his school because he was providing a vital counterbalance, I would suggest, to the politically correct teachings that are now going on in the schools. And you really want to hear both sides of the argument. And this Dr. Bernard Randall was really putting the other side of the argument in, certainly not in hateful language. I mean, he's preaching tolerance for other people's point of view here. And yet he was reported to prevent the anti-terrorist group for doing so. Well, we'll have to keep following this because he is taking it to court. He has had a lot of publicity for this. There are a lot of Christian organizations that are backing him. And I think it's a tribunal. It's an employment tribunal or something similar like that. But what we really need to happen is for a case to get to Crown Court, where it is a Christian preacher preaching the Bible, and he's been accused of hate speech for quoting from the Bible, because then a judge will have to decide whether it is protected speech as a Christian to actually quote bits from the Bible and to talk about our Christian faith. And once that gets decided, then that will be understood as being the interpretation, and that we are legally entitled to talk about these things, even if other people disagree with us, because it seems to go directly against our laws on free speech to prevent us from being able to say how we see things, and to give these minority groups extra protections so that they don't ever have to hear anything that they don't like to hear, when the rest of society has to put up with hearing things they don't like to hear. Don't forget, a lot of Christians don't like to hear all this pro-trans stuff and all this pro-homosexual stuff, but they just put up with it. They tolerate it for the good of everybody else. We all want to get along. But these minority groups make such a fuss about hearing anything that they don't want to hear, and they've been given the impression that they have the right not to hear anything they don't want to hear. And that means that we're not all equal under the law. And the way to sort this out is at Crown Court. So a precedent is set, and that will get written into our law, because that's the way that the laws work in Britain. It's a continually evolving process, and it's all hashed out in the courts. So we will still have to wait for that to happen. But at least you understand that you have this defense. If you are talking about these things, we are protected under the law. Our religious beliefs are protected under the law. And that is what people should argue if they are ever accused of this. And we did have somebody arrested the other day who was preaching about these sort of subjects, about it, marriage being between a man and a woman. And I'm not sure if he got charged or not, but again, he has this Christian organization behind him. And that's another good thing about this. At least we do have these Christian legal organizations that are funding the lawyers and are prepared to take this to court if it ever does actually get there. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.